Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Dada.
Dada.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
To get to the other side.
I thought that was a punchline for a different joke.
Knock, knock.
I'm not doing this anymore, Greg.
That is so Dadaist. I mean, the destruction of the joke, the rejection of comic art, the pervasive sense of disgust with everything. I think you've really got a handle on Dada, but let me test that. How many Dadaists does it take to rivet a giraffe with a hydraulic shaper?
That's not how the joke usually... Today on the show, the artistic movement that objects to artistic movements. Can Dada be alive? And now, a commercially available screw-cutting orchid smashed with a sledge tiger, Colin McEnroe.
We think Dada is alive. In fact, we know Dada is alive. We can prove Dada is alive, even though I think maybe Dada would reject the idea of proof. But we'll find out more about it. I'm on a learning curve myself. Let me tell you who's on the show today. First of all, I'll just sort of tell you why we're doing the show. Why we're doing the show is I was at an event at Real Artways, I don't know how long ago, and a guy named Jeff Poole, a Connecticut artist, walked up to me, and he said he was going to be curating a Hartford Dada art show. Which indeed is opening this Thursday, that's the 26th, at the Pump House Art Gallery in Bushnell Park. And I said to him, well, I would do a whole show about Dada. That would be a great idea. So in studio with us right now is Jeff and two of the artists represented in the show, Clinton Deckard, he's a South Indian-based artist and roaming curator. Nancy Wynn is an assistant professor at Eastern Connecticut State University, and she's a Glastonbury-based artist and curator at the Clare Gallery in downtown Hartford. So that's who's in the studio. And then we started thinking, who else could talk to us about Dada? I should have thought. I thought this morning. I thought, you know, who would have been great? Maybe he's even listening. Is Bill Griffith, who draws Zippy the Pinhead, and he does listen to this show. And if he's, I don't know. Say, I think that might be the Dada comic strip of our times. But we thought, who else could talk to us about this? Well, Jonathan Keats has been on the show many times. He's an experimental philosopher, artist, art critic. He's often with us to talk about his various projects, which hint at Dada. So we got Jonathan. He's in the studios of KQED in San Francisco. And then I thought, who else could we get? And then I thought of Andre Kudrescu, who was probably the first public radio superstar, even in the early days of public radio. He started doing those tremendous commentaries on All Things Considered. He's the author of the posthumanist Dada Guide, Zara and Lenin Play Chess. We should also say that he's got some good news, too. He's been finally made a finalist for the National Book Award for his collection So Recently Rent a World, New and Selected Poems, 1968 to 2012. So that's our lineup today, an all-star Dada lineup. I'm going to begin with you, Jonathan. Just obviously, so there are a certain percentage of the audience is going, what? Because they don't even know the word. They don't even know the term. Dada doesn't really mean much of anything to them. So if you can, I don't know, in a few words, can you set the stage? Can you give us a sense of what it is we're talking about?
Well, I think that the story, which may be apocryphal, appropriately enough, that the word Dada was come up with as a title for a movement by putting a knife into a dictionary, perfectly embodies what Dada is about, which is sort of not only anti-art, but anti-rationality, anti-everything. It is utter and complete nonsense, and at its best, it continually renews that sense of nonsense by rejecting itself.
That's beautiful. Well, we do know where it started. It started in Zurich, specifically in Zurich, right around 1916. So, Andre Kudrescu, maybe you can kind of set the scene for us in Zurich. Who was there, and why were they thinking about something that would become Dada?
Everybody who didn't want to die in World War One was in Zurich, if they could make it. So you had political exiles, revolutionaries, artists who didn't want to be in the war, pacifists of every stripe, shady characters who were working all kinds of scams, and spies, lots and lots of spies, because Switzerland was neutral, so it was in the conflict, and so the big powers at war were using Zurich as a very good place for their under-the-table dealings and so on. So Tsara was there at the same time with Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, the founder of Bolshevism and philosopher of Marxism, who was plotting the return to Russia in for a new revolution. And Sattara, a young Romanian poet, and Lenin, the ideologue, met quite often at Café de la Terrasse, where all the exiles were hanging out for news. And they not only met, but they're said to have played a game of chess or two. And so chess, sort of metaphorically, these two daddies, the daddy of communism and the daddy of Dada, met over a chess table.
And so, Andrei Codrescu, Dada initially did seem to arise from just disgust and abhorrence over what had happened in World War I. I mean, is that what it was, just a reaction to the chaos and death of World War I?
Only in part. This Dada, the movement was in the making for a long time because the European art was pretty much bankrupt, and a variety of modern writers and artists are already pointing to the rotten, wobbly house of European art and connecting to other kinds of sacred and primitive art from Africa and other places. And it was a time that the sort of resounding no of Dada could be heard very well, and it was it echoed very deeply, and it became really the alternative to the ideology of war, which everyone, including Lenin, thought inevitable.
We're going to have Andrei Codrescu with us the whole time here. Jonathan Keats, one of the sort of paradoxes, I guess, of Dadaism is that it does sort of reject a lot of the structure that art would be, and it even, I think, almost rejects the idea of being an art movement. Hugo Ball in the Dadaist Manifesto in 1916, I think he called it a tendency rather than anything else, which I'm assuming made it kind of hard to sustain something. I mean, you can't really have a school of Dadaism if it's so anti-everything.
Well, I think that the problem actually was that it couldn't remain a tendency, that it, like anything that ends up having a name, tended to define itself. And when that happened, it resulted in, I think, a far less interesting version of what it might have been. And probably the most interesting players were people like Marcel Duchamp, who was not a Dadaist, who, for instance, submitted a urinal under the name Fountain to an art exhibition in New York as a ready-made, as an object that had been selected. And by virtue of the fact that it had been selected, that made it a work of art. And the scandal that ensued was, I think, kind of the perfect embodiment of the sort of Dada effect of everything coming into question. And that didn't need the title, didn't need the name Dada, but certainly the Dada tendency was there and was something that was influencing Duchamp and that continues to influence people today.
You. I mean, I can sort of draw a direct line from that to you, Jonathan Keats. Jonathan Keats, just to sort of put that in perspective, is done things like open a space agency for potatoes, exhibited extraterrestrial abstract art, presented the world's the nation's first Ouija voting booth. I think the first time we met him, he was making plants watch television. And in just a second, he'll also tell you about a project he has right now to help communities leverage relativity. But before we get back to Jonathan, I want to go around the room a little bit and maybe talk about Andrei Codrescu's resounding no that he talked about and see how that sort of surfaces up. Jeff Poole, I'm going to start with you. You're the guy who's curating a Dada exhibit in Hartford. Why does Hartford and the world need Dada and its resounding no right now?
expressly for Hartford, I think Hartford needs the show because there are a lot of wonderful artists in Hartford who are kind of working in this realm, and it's kind of an underground thing. And I thought bringing this art to the forefront would be a great reason to have a Dada show. As far as Dada, you know, the idea, the concept, you know, it's always a good time for Dada in Hartford. Our state government, the USA, you know, governments around the world, who don't seem to be able to get a handle on what it is to be a human, be a group of people, be a nation living on this beautiful planet. The Dadas were totally fed up with their leaders, political, cultural, who didn't seem to be able to keep them out of wars, for example. And just as then, here we are 100 years later, and we have our leaders in the USA totally unable to keep us out of wars. They, you know, we get all nationalistic and jingoistic. Let's bomb whomever, and it's. I think, as I say, it's always a good time for Dada.
We're going to go back to Andrei Kudryavskiy in just a second. You know, he talked about Zurich being full of spies, lots and lots of spies. Obviously, at the present moment, spies are everywhere, espionage is everywhere, and that may contribute a little bit to what Jeff Poole is talking about. But Clinton Decker, what does it mean to you that you're in a Dada exhibit? Did you think of yourself as a Dadaist going into this?
Well, the whole Dada movement and the Dada artists is what kind of opened my eyes when I first started painting. For a long time, I was emulating other things, and I was really bored with there's only so many paintings you can do that doesn't look like something that's seen before, such as, you know, bowls of fruit or cows in a meadow, boats in a harbor. I wanted to find my own signature style, so I started doing research and going to the museums. The Wadsworth Athenaeum is one of them. And I had the aha moment when I saw what the Dadaists were doing and how surrealism evolved out of that, and I really felt an affinity towards that whole concept of just doing whatever you want to do and the automatism of it and just trying to strike a balance in the end, even though you start off with a chaos, trying to resolve it as a final puzzle and let others interpret it whatever way they wish. Hopefully the final result is something that can be thought-provoking. It may be a magic carpet ride for their own imagination. I'd like to take this moment just to read a little quote from Tristan Zara. It says, "Dada doubts everything. Dada is an armadillo. Everything is Dada, too. Beware of Dada. Anti-Dada is a disease. Self-kleptomania, man's normal condition, is Dada. But the real Dadas are against Dada."
All right. Yeah, I think you just made Andrei Kudryavskiy very happy by reading Tristan Zara. As I said, we're going to come back to him in just a second. But Nancy Nguyen, tell us about your own relationship to Dada.
Yeah, I was asked to submit a piece, and I was very honored to be able to submit a piece. And my style is usually not in the Dada tradition, but my tendency is to go Dada when I'm very frustrated and angry. So the couple of pieces I submitted to the show were actually produced back in 2005 during the Bush administration. So I thought it was actually kind of poignant to bring them back out and share again. And they're basically...
When you say go Dada, yeah, what does that mean? What do you do when you go Dada?
Right. To me, go Dada means that when you feel frustrated, and I was frustrated back then, and I'm still a little bit frustrated now with, again, the government leaders, the way that the world is going, gun violence in our country, you feel a need to express yourself. Mm-hmm. And the piece that's going to be in the show was a result of that feeling. Mm-hmm. The piece that's not in the show was a performance piece called Uniform of the Day, and that, again, was a response. It was T-shirts that were worn, had sayings on them. People would respond to them. You'd create a dialogue from the T-shirt saying. And again, it's this feeling, this need to express oneself when you're utterly frustrated by what's going on.
That's Nancy Nguyen talking about what happens when an artist starts breaking Dada. And here's we're going to go back to Andrei Kudryavskiy. Andrei Kudryavskiy, you know, just going back to that historical moment in 1916 and then looking at the moment right now, obviously, in a lot of ways, these are really, really different moments. I mean, it's in 1916, Europe is responding to this horrific, all-encompassing war. Now we're responding to lots of little wars and a lot of other kinds of estrangement from traditional sources of authority. Does Dada always need to kind of push back against something like that? And is Dada pushing back against something right now?
Dada is a spirit that never rusted, that never died since it first surfaced in Zurich. It didn't go away, and just like folks there are saying, it becomes more relevant in times when the crisis is more acute, and then we feel it. And I have to say that I disagree with the word Dada being, I think the word Dada is extremely important. I think that Dada, which in Russian and Romanian means yes, yes, though paradoxically it said no, no, it's really an affirmative. It's an affirmative spirit, and it's one. It's one of you know, Nancy said of you know, that it comes when the world or an individual seems to go go Dada or Nova. Go Nova probably is a good word, but it's you know, it's a, it never rested. And part of it is, while other modernist movements are very easy to museumify and curate and put in museums and look at them as look at them in deadness. Cause I'm sorry to say, but I think a museum is a crypt. And you know, most of modernism is in the 20th century, and they're very easily in museums. But Dada is very hard to curate because it's still alive, and it leaves. It's not just inside the room. No, and in fact, Dada has made an effort not to have a style and not to be defined, so that they could stay paradoxical and alive. And most of the really live movements, like in the 20th century, like Fluxus and Happenings and punk and post-punk, were Dada, were pure Dada.
This reason,
well, yes, it's relevant.
The answer is yes, Andrei Kudrowski. Thank you. And you know, Jeff Poole, this goes back to something that you faced. You know, it's hard to be a commissioner of Dada, you know, and say, okay, you're Dada, you're not Dada. I mean, something that's sort of so opposed to structure kind of resists classification. Andrei Kudrowski said it's hard to curate something like that because it's alive, it's not dead, it's not in the past, it's happening right now. How did you decide who was Dada and who wasn't?
Well, it wasn't actually very easy. The aspect of Dada that moves me is the political and social comment, you know, with a little bit of irony, a little bit of pointed humor, and that's the kind of thing that I was looking for in particular. But I know that Dada is also a movement that, or you know, there are different aspects of Dada, and different individuals played different parts. Duchamp and his compatriots, Francis Bacabia, Man Ray in New York, and then others in Europe were wanting to say something about the art establishment and what is the definition of art, the art establishment of the times, of course. And so there are lots of pieces in this show that deal with that subject. That's not naturally the kind of thing that I do as an artist, but it's interesting, and so there's a lot of Dada like that. There were some people who submitted things that weren't quite sure what Dada was about, and I had lots of back and forth emails with people, kind of trying to figure out a reason why their pieces were Dada or why they just plain old were not Dada. And so some people got in through the back door in a way, and some people didn't get in the back door or the window or anything. But it's just amazing because we got probably 30 different artists in the show. Most of the artists who submitted things got into the show, it's just, you'll just see a tremendous range of work, which will be an answer to your question in a way.
All right. We want you to feel able to participate in this show, too. So our number is 860-275-7266. That's, once again, 860-275-7266. You might have a question. You might have an example of where you think kind of Dada is surfacing right now in 2013. You might have something else to say. 860-275-7266. You may also tweet us at WNPR Colin. Jonathan Keats, a lot of your work, as some of the work that I just cited, seems more in that category that Jeff Poole just talked about, a kind of rejection of traditional notions about art, or at least asking some fairly penetrating and open-ended questions about what would you call art. Is that where Dada and you connect?
I think that for me, Dada is interesting because it calls everything into question. And that's what I'm interested in doing. And the fact that the art world often supports that, I think, is part of the Dada legacy. In fact, Modernism Gallery, where I have exhibited a lot of these works here in San Francisco, is run by somebody who got into art initially because of Dada. And that resonance allows for me to be able to show work in his space that frankly, doesn't really have any market value or any real relevance from the standpoint of what is happening right now in the realm of painting or sculpture. I'm interested in exploring ideas and kind of try to avoid calling myself an artist, let alone a Dadaist, by coming up with this nonsense title, Experimental Philosopher, which more or less is as random a title as Dada was when it was initially coined.
As I said, our number is 860-275-7266. As we started kind of mining this whole thing, I know, I just started looking at all kinds of things, trying to kind of help myself get infused, I guess, with the Dada spirit. So, and if you do that, there are so many strange things. But by far, the most bizarre thing that I came up with was on YouTube. I found a reference to it somewhere else. I think it's actually on an album, a kind of conceptual record called Lipstick Traces. But I actually found a video of Marie Osmond talking about Dada, talking specifically about the poet Hugo Ball, and actually reciting a Hugo Ball poem. So, and if you don't believe me, here it is.
Kawani jolifanto blamba o fali humbla. Hai globlo aikora sula huju. Holaka holala. An logobang. Blagobang. Blagobang baso futaka. Shamba uwala wasa. Olobo. An logobang. Blagobang. Blagobang baso futaka. Shamba uwala wasa.
So that's Marie Osmond, and I think we're all profoundly moved by that in one way or another. But Andrei Kudrescu, you know, we've talked a lot about Dada in the fine arts, but Dada happened all over the place. It happened in music. It still happens in music. And it happened in letters, too. That was by Hugo Ball. He was, in fact, making up a language because he didn't want words that had been invented by somebody else. Your countryman, we talked a lot about Tristan Tzara, one of the other people, trying to do Dada in letters. But say a little bit more about that. I think maybe it's easier to understand how in the visual arts you could try to approximate Dada. How did the people who work with words and letters do it?
Well, that was a wonderful piece he just played. And it's, you know, I mean, the Dadaist didn't differentiate between life and art, certainly. I mean, if anything, they were in favor of life and certainly didn't or liked very much popular art. They liked the circus and the sort of actual Vulgate, you know, and they really didn't like the language in the precious ways in which the writers of most days used the muse, you know. So really, because there was no distinction between life and art, and that they were partisans of life in all forms, they found art to be really a kind of a handicap to spiritual freedom. And I have no idea what you asked me just now.
That's Dada in itself.
Yeah, that's. I think that is the perfect Dada answer. Actually, I'll tell you what. I think we're going to take a break right now. If you want to be part of this conversation, and I see some people do, the number is 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266. Let's take a break. We'll be back. All right, we're back. We're talking about Dada. Just to kind of give you another example, in fact, a couple of people here said they really liked the Marie Osmond reading of the Hugo Ball poem, which had that kind of made-up language in it. And in fact, I do encourage you to seek this out on YouTube because it's longer than that, and she actually kind of sets the stage. She explains a little something about Hugo Ball and about Dadaism. I don't know what her actual connection would be, but she does apparently have a connection. But just to sort of show you how different these things can be, too, or how I think a couple of people here have just talked about how Dadaism kind of opens up possibilities. I also found audio of the poet Christian Buck. And he's performing also. He's performing Dada sound poetry on this. This is actually up on the poetryfoundation.org. But I think we also hear him doing some Hugo Ball made-up language Dada poetry here.
Hmm.
All right, that's Christian Bach. It's B-O-K, by the way. His Twitter feed has changed my life. It's pretty amazing, the stuff that he links to. But anyway, he's working from the same poet, Hugo Ball. But, you know, Clinton Decker, I think, you know, initially you were sort of saying that one of the things that happened to you when you discovered Dada is it opened up your ideas about what art could be. Although we got a tweet from Mary Cryan saying, if everything is anything art? What about that?
I guess you have to say that it is, because art is undefinable, really, because what's art to one person is non-art to somebody else. And I think that's where Dada has such a huge influence still today. The movement itself, it only went about 8 years, mm-hmm. Roughly 1916 to 1924. The Dada Manifesto was written in 1918, and then when it concluded in 24, it kind of was transferred over to the Surrealist movement when André Breton wrote the Manifesto in 1924. But I think it's relevant today because Dada wiped the slate clean, where anything and everything was acceptable, and that's true to art still today. The big difference, I think, is back then things were a little bit slower, and now everybody's living their lives at twice the speed of sound. So instead of wiping the slate clean after 8 years, you almost have to do it at the end of every day.
I like that. That's really good. Yeah, Nancy Wynn, since you're a professor too, maybe you can help us out, because I think a lot of people hear Dada and then they think surrealism and they think, well, what's the difference between those two things?
Yeah, well, I think, again, Dada was not necessarily a movement. We might talk about it as a state of being, a spirit, an energy, a lifestyle, a philosophy. But, to get to the question of is everything art, I mean, I might argue that, ideas are the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And there's many different ways to manifest an idea. It can be literature, it can be visual art, it can be music. And the most important thing is the idea. So I think Dadaism kind of made that whole and kind of brought it to the nth degree. And we're doing that constantly. So can everything be art? I'm not sure that everything can be art, but certainly we can talk about that question.
You know, I think one question that some people might have is, imagine that I'm not running around in galleries in Chelsea, Jonathan Keats, looking for work that might be Dada. Maybe I'm not even going to the Pump House Gallery on Thursday to watch Jeff Poole open his exhibition that's Dada. I'm just sort of inhabiting the American mass culture. Am I going to encounter Dada? Are there ways in which Dada really kind of filters in to things that the average person who's not an art cognoscenti would understand?
Well, I think that it's telling that there was a boxing match back around 1920 or thereabouts that involved a man named Craven, who was associated with the Dada movement, who was also a professional boxer. And that boxing match by many was deemed to be a Dada moment. So maybe Dada is not so much about what gets made as how you perceive it. And there's a way in which you can become a Dada observer of the world. And Dada art can help you to get there so that you no longer need Dada art. You no longer need the gallery or the museum in terms of spurring you to look at things differently and question everything.
What about that, André Kudrescu? Is Dada kind of a multivitamin now that you can take every day?
No. Art is not everything, and everything is not art, but there is art in everything. And so looking at the world and seeing what is Dada about it and what is absurd and paradoxical and stands out is art. So really, Dada is a way of looking at everything and seeing what about it is interesting to you for one reason or another. and that is art. There were a lot of Dada type experiments, even in the beginning, that became part of mass culture. And certainly the Dadas picked up collage from Picasso and from earlier artists, and the surrealists took collage to another dimension. But collage is the language of mass media now, it's the language of advertising. And that's completely an accepted part of the way we live now. But there is another use of Dada, which is to maintain human beings in the face of this robotic machine culture that's taking over everything, including our bodies. And so Dada has a way of gumming the machinery, you know. I wish that all the political people talked like Hugo Ball, you know. I mean, every time I listen to somebody, to a politician talk, I space out and I hear just like Christian Bach's reading of Hugo Ball. That's what I hear. Cartoon, but, you know, I mean, and that's Dada, you know, because you really take cliches and, you know, things that put people to sleep and you transform it into some kind of nonsense that wakes you up. And to wake up is to really get out of the machine for about a second, if possible.
Jeff Poole, I sense from your body language you're ready to chime in with something.
Yes, I'm reading my notes so I can say something intelligent. I was going to agree with Andre that one of the things that the Dadas were about was the idea that modern industry and technology was dehumanizing mankind. And the perfect proof of that was the war machinery that was blowing everybody to smithereens and causing great harm to these countries who had so blithely got into the war.
You know, the other place that I see Dada filtering through into the mass culture, culture that people really would be aware of, and it's not so much that politically conscious part that Jeff is talking about right now, but it seems to me that some of the absurdism of Dada has sort of found a nesting place in modern humor. I think of the early Steve Martin routines where he would come out with a banjo and make balloon animals and put an arrow through his head and then begin to say these kind of poems that were kind of built on non sequiturs. And certainly there's a lot of Dada in the work of Monty Python. We can't play it on the radio because it's totally visual, but if you look up fish slapping dance on...
Or the room for an argument,
yeah.
Or the Ministry of Silly Walks.
Or the Ministry of Silly Walks. Or even this scene from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
The Knights Hussein demand a sacrifice.
Knights of Ni, we are but simple travelers who seek the enchanter who lives beyond these woods.
We shall say ni again to you if you do not appease us.
Well, what is it you want?
We want a shrubbery.
A what?
Please,
no more. We will find you a shrubbery.
You must return here with a shrubbery, or else you will never pass through this wood alive.
Oh, Knights of Ni, you are just and fair, and we will return with a shrubbery.
One that looks nice.
Of course.
And not too expensive.
Yes.
Now, go!
Oh, Knights of Ni, we have brought you your shrubbery. May we go now?
It is a good shrubbery. I like the laurels particularly. But there is one small problem.
What is that?
We are now no longer the knights who say ni. We are now the knights who say icky patang zoom boing.
All right, that seems like straight out of the Hugo Ball playbook at the end there. But Jonathan Keats, this raises another question, you know, and it's sort of here in a lot of the conversations that we've had, and I want to hear a bunch of people from the show about this. But, you know, from the point of view, I think, of Tristan Tzara and Hugo Ball and these artists working from 1916 to 1924, this isn't something where you can put your foot on the gas pedal and then take it off. It seems like their commitment to Dada was pretty extreme. We're doing, by the way, if you're just tuning in, you must be so confused. We're doing a show about the art tendency known as Dada. But, you know, I guess one of the questions that I have is how pure does your heart have to be when you're doing Dada? How totally committed do you have to be to it? Or is it just something that you can kind of thread in and out of other kinds of work?
I think that Puritanism, purity, the tendency to be Dada in some sort of a total way probably is the antithesis of Dada. In my own work, I really strive to find my way into the most absurd situation that I possibly can and to bring others there as well. I have no idea whether the Dadaists would have accepted me, and I frankly don't care. I think that, however, that tendency to find the absurd is something that can be refined and that I have learned from the Dadaists to some extent in terms of how I find that in order to be able to mine it in my own work, which doesn't necessarily have any of the aesthetic qualities of Dada. It isn't recognizably Dada, and I wouldn't call it that because that would probably just get in the way of the experience itself.
I want to go to Andre on this because my sense, my very untutored sense of what things were like there in 1916 was that a collection of artists, at least for the moment, they were going to put down a lot of the tools that had worked for them in the past. They were going to reject those things, break them over their knees, and try to use other things that had never existed before in order to create art that was somehow or other a rejection of everything that had come before, which raises the question, can you be Dada if you're not committed at that level?
Well, that was an accidental meeting of brilliant people who were getting away from the war and together their minds sparked all sorts of novel experiments. But this book, The Post-Human Dada Guide, I wrote, if you don't mind, I'll just read you a paragraph here. It says, this is a guide for instructing post-humans in living a Dada life. It is not advisable, nor was it ever, to lead a Dada life. It is, and it was always foolish and self-destructive to lead a Dada life, because a Dada life will include, by definition, pranks, buffoonery, masking, deranged senses, intoxication, sabotage, taboo breaking, playing childish and or dangerous games, waking up dead gods, and not taking education seriously. On the other hand, the accidental production of novel objects results occasionally from the practice of Dada, and during times of crisis like wars and plagues, some of these objects can be truly novel because they sabotage prevailing sentiments. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah. You can't be, you know, you shouldn't. Some of us do live a Dada lifestyle, but, you know, you have to, in that case, think that you're going to live fast and die young. Yes, indeed, some Dada itself.
All right, so there's risk to going all in. I'll tell you what, we've got some great calls on the line here from Bruce in Berlin, and or maybe he's in Berlin, who knows. Nathan, I think, is calling in from South Carolina or thereabouts. What we'll do now is you guys hang on, Bruce and Nathan. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll reset the stage. We'll tell you more about Dada. I want to salute my fine crew here. We've been experiencing computer problems today, serious computer problems, which seem somehow or other to be Dadaist in spirit in their rejection of the mechanistic technological control of radio by a computer. But anyway, there's a lot of things that we do with computers that we're having to do sort of by humans today. And one of them is to quickly thank you everybody who worked on the show, especially Kion Wolf, who really is the person who helped me put all this together and found all these wonderful guests and made the dream a reality. Patrick Scahill's in there trying. He's the Geordie LaForge today. He's trying to cope with all these technological problems and keep the show running. He's doing a great job. Betsy Kaplan is always our interns. I can't see who they are. Garrett Connolly is one of our interns. Albert Gordon, I think, is the other one today. So anyway, thanks to all of them. And I want to tell you who's here, Andre Kudrowski. We're so honored. Andre Kudrowski, the author of pertinently for today, the post-human Dada guide, Zara and Lenin play chess. Jonathan Keats, an experimental philosopher, artist, and art critic. He's joining us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. And then artists participating in, and in one case curating, the Dada exhibit, the Hartford Dada Art Show, which is opening Thursday of this week at the Pump House Art Gallery in Bushnell Park. That's Jeff Poole. He's curated the show. Clinton Deckard and Nancy Wynn are both artists who are present in the show. That's who's here today. And we've got some phone calls coming in. Actually, Bruce, if you could just hang on the line for 2 seconds, Nathan Durfee is calling in from South Carolina, another artist in the show. And so, Nathan, you've been listening to a lot, if not all, of this conversation. What are we missing right now? What do you want to help us out with?
Well, you're trying to think of contemporary examples of Dada, and I just wanted to mention that also in humor, it's continued with a lot of Adult Swim programming in the Cartoon Network. TV shows like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and Robot Chicken really do embrace the absurdity and the everything, including the kitchen sink approach to comedy.
Yeah, and I would actually add web comics to that in general. I mean, it became clear to me today just looking, I'm not much of an expert in web comics, but to whatever, there's a lot of Dada in there, a lot of sort of non-sequential thinking there. But yeah, thanks for those examples. Those are great. Let me just jump over for a second. I'm going to put Nathan on hold. Let's go over to Bruce in Berlin. Hi, Bruce. I may have just in the process knocked Andre Kudrowski off the line. Can somebody try to get Andre back? Okay, hi Bruce.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I was going to comment that the leader in music in the Dada realm was Eric Satie, a composer. He lived in France, and he lived between 1866 and 1925, and he led the movement, and it was sort of a reaction to, let's say, the impression music of Debussy and Ravel, and also the modernism or expressionism of Stravinsky. And he wrote pieces with a title such as Three Pieces in the Shape of a Pear, and a ballet, which is actually performed quite frequently, called Parade, or Parade. And it was performed, and it still is occasionally. But he was really the leader of it.
You know, it's funny. I don't think of Satie as a Dadaist, and his music is so sort of soulfully beautiful that it seems very different from some of the stuff that we're talking about. But it's an interesting point. As long as we're on music, though, we should talk a little bit about Dadaist music. There are some obvious examples. Actually, very quickly, before we even get to some of the more serious, this is pretty serious, too, actually. The Talking Heads probably are, among modern bands, the ones that most obviously embrace Dada. Stop Making Sense is so obviously a Dada title for anything. But in fact, from one of their other albums, they actually did do one song also based, once again, on the kind of nonsensical invented language of Hugo Ball. So let's hear a little bit of Izimbra. But Nancy Wynn, you were also talking before the show started about a concert that was held, I think, last week in New York. You and Jonathan Keats both talking about this monotone symphony. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I had read about it in the New York Times, and it sounded fascinating. Unfortunately, it was sold out. I certainly would have loved to have gotten a ticket. But it was basically to have a whole orchestra and chorus sing one note for 20 minutes continuously, and then stop abruptly, and then move to silence for 20 minutes. And I can't remember where the performance space was, but it was quite a large performance space, so even the audience members had to be silent. So again, the feeling, the expression, how does one's body feel in that space, what's happening? Very, very interesting.
And you were saying people would hear different things as a result
during the first part of it. Some people were talking about hearing bagpipes. I mean, unless you go through an experience like that, I would have absolutely no idea how I would feel. I'd have to experience it.
Jonathan, did you want to amplify that? I mean, it sounds a little bit also. We think of John Cage's 4:33, right?
Yes, I think that there's a way in which this sort of music creates a context once again, as I was arguing earlier, that Dada does in general. It creates a context for perception and a way in which, as the audience, you can become more proactive, if not completely the creator of your world and therefore of the Dada artwork that is your life. At least you can become a co-creator, co-instigator of it. I think that there's a way in which these works frame the world as a space in which you can get out of your everyday life, get out of your common sense way of thinking. And these works can be provocations. Colin, you actually, not so long ago, around 2 years ago, I think were courageous enough to play a work that I created, my Copernican Music, which brought Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier into alignment with the universe itself by giving it the entropy of the universe. So 10% of the notes were decomposed. And the work was, quite frankly, awful. I can't believe that you played it. But I hope, once again, that this sort of thing can create a space in which people can enter into other sorts of dialogue and can think about things from a slightly altered perspective, perhaps even without drugs.
Well, Jonathan, we've just sort of committed to going along with whatever you want us to do. And it's either going to lead to ruin or to acclaim and greatness. We're not sure which. But, you know, there's John Cage's 4:33, which is 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence. One of the things, one of the interesting ways that was used in recent years, there apparently is this contest in Great Britain to have something be the song of Christmas. It's actually sort of documented a little bit in the movie Love Actually, where people vote to have some pop song become the song of Christmas. And there was a movement among artists in Great Britain to have John Cage's 4:33 become the song. I think it lost out to, you know,
better than Silent Night.
Something by Peter Frampton. But there is kind of an interesting, that's part of, to me anyway, the whole idea of Dada gets even more interesting, Andre Codrescu, when it bumps up against mass culture. I mean, to me, that's exciting, the idea of trying to insert something as deliberately crazy as Dada into mass culture that's so uncomfortable with crazy ideas. I'll let you react to that any way you want to.
Well, just to go back to the musical part of Dada, that's also Zen, it's also called Zen Buddhism. But as for, you know, which is also part of mass culture at the moment, but mass culture in itself has a lot of Dada before Dada even intervened as a conscious act, artistic act. Popular culture is full of contradictions, paradoxes, and the sort of delights that come when incongruous things and situations meet each other. And there's, you know, there are all sorts of, you know, so-called low, you know, low culture, you know, supposed to high culture. I don't know, cultural Dada moments that happen when people draw or are together or collaborate on a work of collaborate on a joke or on a song or all of that collaborative thing that sort of reinforces the community that is based on this idea that absurdity is ecstatic and delightful is Dada. So,
that's the answer I was hoping to get, and we are just flat out of time, Andre Codrescu. We are so this went fast considering it was a show about Dada, and I know Jeff Poole wanted to say some good words about the city of Hartford. I just want to say Pump House Gallery is a great place. They are great for hosting something like this. Where We Live will be downtown tomorrow in a space right near the XL Center. Come find us. I'll be there with John Dankowski, whatever his name is, for the Wheelhouse. Anyway, thanks to all of you who joined us today for the Dada Show.
Thank you.
No gazebos go berserk. Ooboo Buddha. Ubermanch. Troubadour. Obese. Oboe. Belzebub. Booby traps. Scuba gear. Juggernaut of bugaboo. Bugger off.
I'm Kyone Wolf. Thanks for listening to the Colin McEnroe Show, where our motto is
prizes. This is